You go. Let's see here. Ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da. So we've been saying stuff that I didn't even know we were saying, and we're live, but that's okay. Got the music on, so we're going to start our program here. And nothing like a little rough start. This is North Shore Sports Night on this Monday night. I'm Rick Moore, along with Tim Kearns. And Coach, how you doing?
I'm doing good, Rick. I'm doing good. A little warm out there working in the backyard today.
Well, you have a whole new deck and all. You have practically a whole new landscape, don't you? And the whole outside of the house, anyway, with the deck, the garage, and all that.
Yeah, the two new. The sheds have been rebuilt, so yeah. I just made a couple of gigs for the side of the back shed to keep the critters. Give them a way out, but the dog can't get after them, so.
We've had trouble in West Gloucester neighborhood with rats lately, and I don't know where they're coming from. The hawks are helping out, thank goodness, but just kind of weird. And I don't know why, whether it's the train situation or whatever. But it has been a fantastic summer weather-wise. Otherwise, not so much. And Tim, the big thing today is we tried to get a hold of some directors of athletics of high schools in the area, and they're really not. They're not able to say much right now because everything is in such flux and they're working so feverishly, really, to try to figure out how to get this thing started. We will be talking with Dale Dunbar, who is the Winthrop High School hockey coach and also an NHL agent, talk about the playoffs and maybe a little bit about high school sports. We'll also chat later on with Mike Grenier about the Celtics. He's got his eye on that playoff system. And, of course, Gary Larrabee has some big news locally in terms of golf, and we'll get into that. But, Tim, how I don't know if you've been keeping up with it, but what's your take on the high school situation? Because there are a couple of sort of tentative plans to start fall seasons with, I don't know, soccer, field hockey, golf, I don't know what else there is, but it only has to do with schools that are having in-person sessions, and that's kind of weird because I know that, like, Gloucester High School is thinking about not going back until later, and yet I don't know why that would prohibit their playing on the field. I don't know. What's your eyeballs telling you?
Yeah, well, it's a difficult thing because, you look at different towns with different rates of infection, and, you're talking about sports, and you're talking about, there's soccer, there's going to be contact. You watch even the professional soccer now. There's still as much contact as ever. They're still spitting, because you build it up in your mouth. You got to get rid of it. So you're not going to be able to stop kids from doing those kind of natural physiological things, and the problem is with young kids, even with the older people, you got to wear a mask. Well, they don't want to wear a mask. They're not going to wear a mask, and then you're going to get kids. You're going to have infection rates go up, and is it better just to push it back indefinitely? And try to cram them in after the first of the year when you get a better handle on this. Because again, there's too many. To me, there's too many unknowns, Rick. I just saw a news story today that the first case of reinfection has showed up. So how often is that going to be come into play now? All around the country.
Well, that's not unusual. I mean, the thing is kind of a preventative. You can get the flu as many times as you can get the flu. So doesn't surprise me at all.
We've had people saying, once you get it, you're not going to get it.
Well, I haven't seen that. I
there are people that listen to it and they just go about their business. And it's going to increase in numbers. This was just the first one. It isn't going away. We've seen college teams, and they're testing all the time, and yet we haven't tested everybody in the country. And yet, professional sports teams, college teams, they're all, testing. Nice that they can get a handle on all the test kits and all this, but the regular population doesn't seem to have access to it, and that should be the first group that gets it.
Well, that's a good point. And
I just think you're playing with fire, putting kids back in classrooms, putting kids on the athletic field as much as they want to do it. You know, if I was in high school, I would want to do it. I would want to play of your health and the sake of your friends, family. You got to step back. I'm sorry. You have to be realistic about this.
Well, we'll see where it goes. The opening of school is still almost a month away, I guess. We have a video with Bill Newell talking with the Salem News sports writers and, of course, the Gloucester Times sports editor as well. That's on our website right here on North Shore Sports Night. You can take a look at their thoughts and what has transpired. The schedule is supposed to get started. There will be some fall sports at least. That's the tentative plan. And that's coming up in a couple of weeks. I think it's right around the 22nd or 24th of September, which is still a month away. I say a couple of weeks, but it's still a month away. All right, so we're going to take a break, Tim. We'll come back with Dale Dunbar. You're listening to North Shore Sports Night here on MSO News Sports. I'm Rick Moore, along with Tim Kearns, our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky, and we'll be back.
This season, start with a winning mortgage rate from your hometown team. Whether you are thinking about buying a new home or condo or refinancing your existing one, our loan rates are among the lowest anywhere. Check out our full menu of rates and terms and apply online 24/7 at institutionforsavingsloans.com. Institutionforsavings.com, member FDIC, DIF, equal housing lender.
Hi folks, this is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. Professional builders and remodelers choose Anderson Windows more than any other brand in the United States. They do so because Anderson Windows and patio doors offer beautiful natural wood interiors, low maintenance exteriors, and outstanding energy efficiency. See the complete line of Anderson Windows at any of our three locations in Beverly, North Reading, or Plaistow, New Hampshire, or at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
All right, here we go. We're back now. Why do I not hear myself? Oh, because I turned down my speaker. I'm Rick Moore, along with Tim Kearns. Dale Dunbar is the Winthrop High School hockey coach. He's also an NHL agent, and we're going to check in with Coach Dunbar in just a minute about his views on the NHL playoffs. But, Coach, I got to ask you first, with this crazy, year, summer, whatever the heck it's called, the schools are planning to get back in session one way or another. Some fall sports are planning to get underway, the Northeast Conference, Cape Ann League, and so on. As a coach, a winter sports coach, how are you in the loop, and maybe what are your thoughts into what's going on?
We may be the first sport to play, that's what I'm hearing. They may even push it back till, after, like mid-December or first week in December as our first game. It changes every day. I was down the rink the other day. There's already, things changing as far as locker rooms and how many people you can have on the ice. And I don't think anybody knows exactly what's going to be until it actually happens. And, again, hopefully for our kids and kids everywhere, especially the seniors, that they can have the season and fulfill their 4 years and compete for a championship.
Dale, what are you thinking or working with at the moment? In a normal year, this time of year, you have a certain place where you are. Whether it's not doing anything, or whether it's just kind of looking things over, or looking at the schedule, maybe talking to some of the kids, or back on the previous season, you've got your own agenda. Change radically? Okay, that's months away. You don't have to really.
You can't see it. Those would like to plan for the normal season. We just don't know. With football being canceled, they'll probably be pushed back. So kids are going to be, do we have kids that primarily football players that play hockey as a secondary sport, not even play hockey, or I don't know. You know, yeah. There's a lot of things that factor in, but the trickle-down effect from this pandemic has hit so many different levels that I don't think you can really have a game plan or anything. I think it's going to be, you know, like hockey, changing on the fly, and hopefully it works out.
Yeah, it's very strange. Well, let's talk a little bit about the playoffs now. We'll start with the Bruins. Last time we talked, I think they were up 2-1 or something like that, and they ended up beating Carolina. And then the other night they opened up against Tampa Bay. So let's take a look at the Carolina series, Coach. And what was the key to that series for the Bruins?
Well, I think once Tuukka, you know, had made his decision, I wouldn't say it's a rally cry because they're professionals. They know what to do. And if Tuukka got hurt, they'd have to play without him anyway, as they would any other player. But I think it really, galvanized what it's all about as far as what a team is. And, you know, when you're in the bubble and you do get closer. But I think McAvoy's hit on Jordan Staal had a lot to do with it. I mean, I think that was a real uplift for them. And from that point on, they just seemed like the physicality and how they hunted pucks and were winning the puck battles all over the ice. I think that really came to the forefront, and I think they've got their identity back.
That's pretty cool because I know last year it was St. Louis just kind of warmed down, and we can get to that in a second. But someone like Halak, Coach, you know, you've been in hockey your whole life. As a defenseman, you work with goaltenders, and Tim, we've had goalies in class. And goalies, I don't want to make a stereotype here, Coach, but they seem to be a different breed. Halak, who's man, he's a seasoned veteran. He seems to be stepping into the breach and taking this and saying, "Okay, I got a good chance here."
Well, you know, it's all about opportunity, and especially, you know, when you are the backup, you know, you might get in 15 games a year. You know, now with everything on the line and you know, every game's magnified, every shot's magnified. It's a totally different animal. And but they, you know, you're a professional, and you have to be ready for that opportunity and seize that opportunity. And when it does come, you know, you want to be ready and you want to make sure that you're prepared and give your team, obviously as a goaltender, the best chance to win, keep the game close, which he has obviously done. So I think he's done an admirable job, and I think you know, he'll get better as it goes on here, because you know, he doesn't see all these different looks that you'd see during the year. You know, like I said, it's not playing. And so everything changes. Everything's, you know, with each game more magnified. And with, you know, they raise their level of compete. You know, it's like field goal kickers in football. Just leave them alone. You know, they're in their own world. Just let them, you know, don't try to do too much with them, because whatever you're thinking, they're not.
I gotta,
and they see things a different way, and you know, you just gotta hope that again they're prepared and they're focused, and the level of compete is, you know, passed on to the team. And you know, players play differently in front of different players. You know, when Tuukka's in there, they might, you know, he's more seasoned, he's more battle ready in the playoffs. He's won a cup. You know, you play maybe a little looser now. They're playing more tight to the vest and clearing out. You know, making sure the chipping pucks out and defending stronger at the blue line.
Before I let Tim take over here, I love that. What you're thinking, they're not. That's someday I got to read a book about goaltenders. I think right now, Coach, my final question before Tim can jump in here, and I've hogged Chara. I have not seen any games. I've only spits. How are his legs holding up?
Well, when you don't really notice them, that means, especially as a defenseman, that means you're having a good game. And I don't think he's really done anything to, you know, to, I mean, let's face it. I mean, he, especially in hockey, he's well beyond his years. And, you know, because of his reach, his size, his approach to the game, I don't know if there's anybody more well-conditioned off the ice and on the ice, he's able to grab those key minutes. I mean, I noticed the other night as that game went down the wire and Tampa Bay had the goalie pulled, and he was out there. and you can't beat that experience. You know, having a guy like that in the lineup that's again battle ready and won a cup. You know, they seem to calm the younger guys down. You know, they give you a different vantage point, viewpoint of how you need to play, simplify things, be more focused, but don't put too much pressure on yourself. And when you have that type of leadership, especially with a guy like him, I think it just it transcends winning. And he's I know he's helped a young defensive core be more poised under pressure. These kids, they have showed no panic button back there. They're back there as the last man, even holding on to the puck and making those subtle plays, and they're making it look easy. So it looks like a confident blue line, and I think his overall approach to the game has really spread through the lineup.
Wow, thanks. Tim, I haven't forgotten you.
Coach, one of the stories in the Globe was the welcome return of playoff Krejci. How big is he for him to be on his game for the Bruins to advance throughout the rest of the playoffs?
For me, I think he's the most important player on the ice. How's that?
Wow.
he's amazing. And again, you got to look at the subtlety of how he can speed a game up or slow a game down. He's so valuable. He sees things that are totally different, especially when the games are tight. I mean, he won't ice the puck. He'll hold and either put it up in the air or off the glass just short, or you know, get a big face-off for you. Now, there's a guy that has ice water in his veins. I mean, he does not feel pressure. He's a guy that you want on the ice when the chips are down, because he's not going to let you down. And seeing him blocking shots at his age and you know, getting more involved and physical and taking a big hit to make a play. Again, these are your leaders, the Bergerons, the Krejcis, the Charas. You know, these are the guys that, and I heard one of the young kids saying it, that, you know, watching these guys do it day in and day out and in practice and in every aspect of the game, they just feel so confident watching them that when they go out there, they don't want to let them down. So, again, that's the type of respect and that's the type of leadership it takes to be able to hoist a cup.
What about chemistry on this team, Coach? I read something, care for each other, and as far as I know, most hockey clubs, you know, at least that we've covered in high school and so on with the coaches, that's one thing. You get a team out there and they're tightly knit, win, lose, or draw. Does that make a difference in the pros?
Oh, chemistry is huge. Chemistry is absolutely huge. Especially now, again, you're magnified. You're in a bubble. You're spending more time, you know, with your teammates that you wouldn't if you were going home or back to the hotel or, you know, I mean, they're doing everything together. And, you know, I've talked to Mike Inieto in Colorado, and he's like, you know, you're FaceTiming, you know, your wife and your family or whatever, but, you know, you're also spending a lot more time with your teammates, and you can't underestimate that. I mean, that bond, that unbreakable bond, goes a long way, especially when you're hurt or you don't want to let your teammates down, and it's just a different feeling you'd have to be able to experience to know exactly what they're going through. But for me, 90% is mental, and when you have the chemistry to go with that and you don't want to let the next guy down, that's pretty tough to beat. And chemistry will beat skill sets. It will, because when your star players aren't getting the puck or, you know, they're sulking or whatever, it's all the other guys that you know, that create that philosophy that it doesn't matter. You're not playing for one guy. You're playing for each other. So, for me, yeah, that chemistry is huge.
How about the guys you keep your eye on other than the Bruins? You mentioned one guy out in Colorado, and I know that you know some other players as well.
I got a couple, but I got Zach Bogosian, who's he's Hedman's partner on Tampa Bay. He's a warrior. We were kidding a couple of weeks ago. He's been in the league. He was picked third overall in Stamkos this year. It was Stamkos, Doughty, and then Zach. And that's the other eight defensemen, I think, went in the first 10 picks. And it's funny, he went to Atlanta, which was, you know, not very good, which turned into Winnipeg, which wasn't very good the first 3 or 4 years. And then he went to Buffalo, which brought him out. So he's been in the league for 11 years and never played one playoff game.
Oh, my goodness.
But now his first playoff game was the fourth longest in NHL history.
Yep.
So I said, you certainly made up for it. You know, it was a minute and change away from playing in the third longest.
Good.
So he's psyched. I mean, he's loving it. He said he's got great teammates, great team, and he was just all over Hedman, just what a great player this guy is. And, boy, I never really watched him, obviously, like I am now. He is special. He really is. It's fun watching you guys, and hopefully it would be tough if Colorado ever met Tampa. That would be a tough one. But we'll see. You know, it's great hockey. It's fun to watch, and it's certainly filling a void at this time of the year.
You got that right. Final question I have, Coach, is how do the Bruins match up against Tampa? Because I said I know they got worn down last year. I thought they had that cup in the bag, but they just got worn down by St. Louis, which to me was reminiscent of what the Bruins did to Vancouver back in 11. How do the Bees match up against Tampa, do you think?
Oh, I think they match up very well. I mean their goaltending, obviously I'd give the nod to Tampa Bay. But similar type defense, you know, they got some guys that can push it up ice, can jump in the play and really create. And they also have guys that defend very well. And then forwards, you know, with Kucherov, you can compare him to, you know, the Krejcis, the Bergerons, the Pasternak. I mean, they've got some really good Paulette. They've got some nice players. So I think it comes down to special teams, too. Special teams and goaltending, which playoffs normally do. You can almost bank on one-goal games. You know, because you're playing a lot more tight to the vest at this time of the year. You don't want to turn pucks over in those critical areas. So managing the puck, I think both teams do it very well. Again, I think it's going to come down to special teams and goaltending, and I think it could go either way. Boston's fortunate. They're up one, which is obviously huge. But now tomorrow's game, game three, I feel, is the most pivotal game, in a seven-game series. But, you know, if Boston can get ahead again tomorrow, then they're going to be tough. They're playing very confident right now.
Tim, you got a final question for Coach?
Yeah, Coach, I'm looking at the seven-game schedule, if it went that far. And, I mean, due to the circumstances, these schedules are really condensed. You've got tomorrow, Wednesday, Friday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday.
Yep.
Do the Bruins have the stamina to stay with Tampa Bay for that quick of a schedule?
Oh, I think so. I mean, everybody's in the same ball right now, Tim. I mean, these guys, their lives have been interrupted so much. You know, I think no one's in tip-top shape. You're starting to see the little nagging injuries that are coming in, like, you know, Pasternak was out, other guys are out. But I think when the lineups are healthy, again, I think you have to shorten up your shifts. You have to, you know, don't stay on the ice too long. Don't try to turn it into a sprint. It's more of a marathon, and you got to just manage your minutes. And I think if they can do that and stay healthy, yeah, I think they can stay there. But again, right now it's a battle. It's not only a mental battle, but it's making sure that you're staying healthy. And again, I think if you simplify things, you know, manage your minutes, stay out of the box. They're all hard minutes at this time of the year, but don't make it harder on yourself by having to kill off a lot of penalties with the same guys. That's the key.
Coach, it's awesome talking hockey with you in the middle of August in 90-degree weather. And if you're around, we're going to call you again next Monday.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, usually I'm freezing. It's freezing cold though when you call.
I know.
I'm on my deck and it's 85. I like that.
All right, Coach. Thank you so much, man. Be well. We'll talk to you next week.
Sounds good, guys. Thanks for the
Thank you, sir.
Thanks, Coach.
That is Dale Dunbar, who is the Winthrop High School hockey coach. He's also an NHL agent. And if there's ever a man with the experience and the know-how and the ability to communicate, it's Coach. Coach Dunbar. And we will take our next break here, come back with Gary Larrabee. He communicates pretty good, too. We'll be right back.
Hey, MSO News Sports is a unique multimedia website providing exclusive news and sports content for the North Shore. Our goal is to keep you connected to your local neighbors throughout Essex County and beyond. We feature the best of the North Shore, and we couldn't provide this service without the powerful support of our local sponsors. Like Sylvan Street Grill in Peabody and Salisbury, the Bradford Tavern in Rowley. Just like us, they care about the North Shore. Check out all of our podcasts and share our website with your friends. Email us at msonewsports@gmail.com. msonewsports@gmail.com. Again, we are your connection to the best of the North Shore. msonewsports.com.
All right, we are back, and from hockey to golf, we're going to bring in Gary Larrabee now, sports historian, golf writer. And Gary, the weather certainly around here continues to be spectacular. How are you doing?
Doing great, and of course the weather was beautiful except for a very short period yesterday, and at the end of the fourth and final round of the Northern Trust Championship, you know, week one of the three-week FedEx Cup competition on the PGA Tour, and that not quite an hour, interruption by rain late yesterday afternoon, early yesterday did not bother Dustin Johnson at all. Dustin Johnson won the Northern Trust with a 30-under par 254 to earn the $1.7 million, beating the field by 11 shots. Harris English was second at minus 19. The amazing thing about this guy, many, many amazing things about it, of course, one of them is that that Dustin's score was one shy of the lowest aggregate for 72 holes ever shot on the PGA Tour. That was 253, shot by Justin Thomas 3 years ago at the Sony, which, of course, is at Riviera Country Club, and amazing scoring out there, too, that year. Out in L.A., but it was he did beat the TPC Boston Pro Tour four-round scoring record by a mere 8 shots. So quite a week for Dustin Johnson, and don't be surprised, guys, if he wins again this week out in the Midwest and then wins again even the week after the finals at Atlanta. I think a lot of us have always thought that Dustin Johnson was an underachiever on the PGA Tour all these years. Only one major championship to say all the money he's won, all the tournaments he's won. Maybe this will be the beginning. He's only the second tournament he's won this year on the tour. But I wouldn't be surprised if he takes off and wins the next 2 weeks as well, and will be considered certainly a favorite both at the U.S. Open at Wingfoot next month, and then after that, the Masters down in Augusta.
You know, Gary, I think we may have even made this reference about him prior. He's the new Tom Kite.
Maybe.
Made millions of dollars finishing second.
Very good point. He's won, you know, one U.S. Open after blowing one the year before, but he's got unbelievable talent. A phenomenal swing, phenomenal distance, phenomenal feel for the game, and just a lot of us, I think, and a lot of the guys out there who follow the tour very closely think he is, he's made himself incredibly rich. He has his own private jet, because his wife, I think they married, because it's Wayne Gretzky's beautiful daughter. They have two beautiful children, so I think Dustin Johnson is certainly living the dream, guys, and we'll see where it goes from here.
Yeah, he's won 22 tour events, and playing at this particular course, a guy gets to 30 under. The guy in second place is 19 under. So you have to start looking at some of these courses, and are they getting too easy to some of these guys with the technology that they're playing with?
I don't think anybody was complaining, Tim, that there was so much spectacular golf and so many spectacular birdies and eagles being made all week down there in Norton at TPC Boston. Some courses are just more scoreable than others. They've always shot low scores at TPC Boston. I've played it a few times, guys, and to me it looks like one of the most difficult golf courses I will ever seeing in my life, but for those guys, it's a piece of cake. And, of course, the interesting one other interesting aspect of this tournament, guys, you may have noticed and finished closer to the bottom than to the top. Tiger and Rory.
Whoa, no. Whoa. Seriously.
But they're both playing this week, week two of the three-week FedEx Cup playoffs, and we'll see how things evolve from the. This is a beautiful contrast, guys, too, from what we had for Champions yesterday. You know, golf is so unpredictable at every level, but particularly at the PGA Tour level and the professional level. And we certainly saw that over at the Women's British Open over at Royal Troon, where someone named Sofia Popov from Germany, not Russia, from Germany, won the Women's British Open, and she was like the 304th ranked woman player in the world. She's never won anything. And, of course, she won a field that was a good field, but minus most of the American players who did not choose to travel and compete. But still a great story for Sofia Popov, P-O-P-O-V.
Well, wait a minute, Gary. The Americans weren't allowed over there, were they? I don't think they were allowed in.
Anyways, well, Morgan Pressel did play. She finished among the also ran. She's an American, of course, one of our favorites on the women's tour. But just a beautiful, beautiful story for the weekend. Contrasting stories between Dustin Johnson, should be winning a lot more, and Sofia Popov, who may have had no right to win yesterday, but she won in convincing fashion.
Yeah, you know, it was funny that she wasn't even supposed to be there, but she just happened to. She got invited to play at a the Marathon Classic 2 weeks ago, had a top 10 finish, and she was only there because other players didn't show up.
Exactly.
So, you know, it's odd. Give it an opportunity, and, you know, you have the game of your life. These kind of things happen. And then you're right, I saw this story on the PGA website, and I'm thinking, this is bigger news than Dustin Johnson. Joe Frank 304. My God, that is exciting news. Can you imagine her feelings of elation? Oh,
yes,
geez.
And of course she's the first woman from Germany. Now she's not from Russia; she's from Germany. The first German woman to ever win a major women's professional golf event. So good for Sofia. A few other quick bulletins, guys, before we wrap up. Brad Tufts just won his fifth straight Tedesco Club Championship, his eighth overall. He now is the second winningest club champion at Tedesco. He surpasses the great Ted Garangelo, the great late Ted Garangelo, who had won seven. But of course, Ted also won a Massachusetts amateur, so in many respects, Ted still is ahead of Brad because he has to still chase Cy Kilgore's. But congratulations, Brad Tufts. Congratulations, Frank Deli from Kernwood, who was the low pro today at the New England PGA one-day pro-am down at Thorny Lee. He shot a 2-under par 68. Not bad for another one of our senior players. Frank is 53. At least, congratulations to 54-year-old Scott Johnson from Peabody, who finished second last week at the New England PGA Championship, the 100th. New England PGA Championship at Tedesco in Myopia. And Scott has only played in three other New England PGA events this year. The only other individual event was the New England PGA Seniors, where he finished fourth a few weeks before this event. But a tremendous accomplishment for Scott at 54 to finish second at the New England PGA. And something you'll read about later this week, guys, in my column, he's been inspired the last couple of years not to play so much golf competitively, but to play hard and play well when he does, but be relaxed all the way through and never get take the game too seriously because his 17-year-old daughter, Hannah, is fighting a very serious case of leukemia right now. And that's really all that matters to Scott, but he's learned from his daughter to relax out there on the golf course, and she's obviously inspired him beyond words, and that inspiration certainly worked well for Scott last week.
Great story, great story. Now, is that the heart of your upcoming column?
It certainly is. That's a scoop I just gave you guys.
That's amazing. That's amazing. And it just puts things in perspective every now and then, Gary. God. Good stuff. Let's see here. Coming up to the end of August, and so we'll check in with you next week for more good stuff, I'm sure.
We'll welcome in September.
All right. Oh, that's right. That's right. Okay. Wait a minute. Wait a minute. Is next? What's the date today? Today is the...
It'll be the 31st.
Okay. So it's not Labor Day. All right. Very good. All right, Gareth.
Thank you, guys. Look forward to it.
Take care. Talk to you later.
Thank you.
That is Gary Larrabee, who was a sports historian and golf writer. Good grief. Man, and Tim, the Tom Kite thing, where'd you get that one?
Oh, I loved watching Tom Kite. He always had the Panama hat working, and wasn't the biggest guy, wasn't the biggest hitter, but he was just Mr. Consistency. Back in the 70s, he was as big a name as anybody out there, but he had a habit of leading the money list every year. And didn't win a whole lot of tournaments.
Well, you know, it's funny. It brings to mind Jimmy Buffett. Jimmy Buffett's probably the richest musician that there is in America, and he's never had a number one hit. So it's sort of like the same thing.
Trying to go out there and finish in the top 10, the top 5.
Yeah.
He'd be runner up. He'd make lots of money. Just never walked away with the trophy.
Okay, we'll be back. Check in next with Mike Grenier. We're going to do a little Celtics talk. You're listening to North Shore Sports Night on this Monday night. Thanks for being with us. We'll be back.
This season, start with a winning mortgage rate from your hometown team. Whether you are thinking about buying a new home or condo or refinancing your existing one, our loan rates are among the lowest anywhere. Check out our full menu of rates and terms and apply online 24/7 at institutionforsavingsloans.com. Institutionforsavings.com, member FDIC, DIF, equal housing lender.
Hi, folks. This is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. Professional builders and remodelers choose Anderson Windows more than any other brand in the United States. They do so because Anderson Windows and Theo Doors offer wood interiors, low-maintenance exteriors, and outstanding energy efficiency. See the complete line of Anderson Windows at any of our three locations in Beverly, North Reading, or Plaistow, New Hampshire, or at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
Alrighty then, we're back now with Mike Grenier, sports writer extraordinaire, and Mike, always great to have you back. Thank you for joining us once again.
You know, it's funny, ordinarily this would be the dog days of summer, but we got the NBA in full swing here, and I'm loving this. Every day is three or four games on. You
know? Well, it's not just the NBA, but the NHL as well. It's like
the
middle of winter, or at least early spring. Now the thing is, Mike, and I got to tell you, I don't know about Tim. Tim watches all these crazy sports in Europe with the ball. They kick it and there's no scoring. But I'm a homer, and so I'll watch the Bruins, I'll watch the Celtics, but I don't really watch all the rest of the stuff. But you do, and what are you getting from this bubble stuff? Because it seems to me like at least the NBA and probably the NHL, they're doing it right.
They're doing it right. Obviously, I think it's awesome that players have not tested positive. They've been sort of observing the protocols and the guidelines, and not too many guys are straight out of the bubble and danger themselves and their teammates and their families. So I think that's been a great aspect of it. Part two, I think the series themselves, whether it be the Celtics-Philly or, you know, Miami Heat playing so great, with no home court advantage, some of these teams... We're seeing a very competitive, for example, today, the Houston Rockets, who ordinarily be heavily favored against Oklahoma City, they lost for the second time in a row to OKC, and that series is all of a sudden 2-2. But, of course, in our area here, the Celtics just completed their first ever four-game sweep over the Philadelphia 76ers. You know, I mean, I go back to the days, Rick, you know, we're saying they played the Philadelphia Warriors, and,
yep.
You know, they had some great Warriors teams with Will Chamberlain and a whole gang of good players, and those were fierce rivalries, and, you know, these days it's not quite as fierce, but Philly was still considered perhaps a moderate contender to win the East if Embiid and those guys got it together. But, of course, Ben Simmons, an all-star player, got hurt before the series even started. And that I think the Celtics would have beaten them anyway, but the Celtics are riding a lot of momentum as they head into this next series against the Toronto Raptors now. You know, and obviously being in the bubble, ordinarily, you know, with a superior record, Toronto would have had the home court advantage, and if there's a seventh game, it would have been heading to Toronto. However, that's not the case, and so we're seeing with the Celtics a little bit of an advantage by not having to have a home court disadvantage, so to speak.
I want to pick up on that later, and I want to let Tim jump in after this question here. I was a little nervous, concerned, when Gordon Hayward went down. What was the key to that Philadelphia series as far as you're concerned?
Well, I think, you know, obviously Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown, in two words, both of those guys played great. And I think, to me, the biggest surprise, and Tim, you may want to chime in on this, was the fact that Kemba Walker played great in the series. Not that he isn't a great player. However, the way they nursed him along at the beginning of the bubble period before the postseason began, you know, it didn't look like he was going to play that many minutes. You know, he was restricted. His minutes were restricted. And then all of a sudden the playoffs come aboard, and he's playing 31, 32, 33, 34 minutes, and he's had a great postseason so far. You know, he's averaging 24 and a half points a game pretty much, and shooting it well from outside. To me, that's been the biggest surprise. I didn't expect him to be able to play this many minutes. So that's been a huge factor.
Yeah, it certainly does, and it certainly is taking a lot of the pressure off the bench that they don't have to feel like they've got to come in earlier in the game or be in the game at the later moments and be under this real microscope and under a lot of pressure to perform. I think one of the things that speaks to the management of Walker's time is an event that went under the radar for probably nearly everybody. But on August 12th, it was reported that the Celts, Danny Ainge, had re-signed Brad Stevenson.
Right.
Very quietly, nothing made about it. Nothing was released in terms of details. But just quietly keeping the core of the management team together. He's had great success. He's 318, 245. He's got the fourth most wins by any coach in franchise history in 7 years.
Yeah, he's done a phenomenal job. And, of course, when he took over, they weren't a good team. So it took him a little while to climb to that victory total, right, Tim? So he's done a great job. And, you know, in sharp contrast, we saw that it took the 76ers less than 24 hours to fire Brett Brown. And he's one of the good guys in the league. I know him personally because he coached Michael Carter-Williams of Hamilton when Michael Carter-Williams won the NBA Rookie of the Year 7 years ago. And I used to have conversations with him in the corridor at the Boston Garden about Michael Carter-Williams and his team. And he's from Portland, Maine, kind of a local guy, so to speak. So it's too bad he got fired. He's one of the really good guys in the NBA. I think he'll get rehired somewhere else. But as far as the 76ers are concerned, this whole trust the process business did not work out for them, and now they're starting to break up the team. So, but right now, we don't care about them. We care about something.
And
the next round against the Toronto Raptors. And guys, you know what? I guess if we had to ask 10 average Celtics fan who they know from the Toronto Raptors, they would say, they would probably still say Kawhi Leonard.
Well, I was going to say Marcus Camby.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, and they've done a remarkable job after winning it all last year, and they lose Kawhi Leonard. He goes on to the L.A. Clippers. And they've done a remarkable job with the players that were left over to become a number two seed. They've been playing fantastic. I mean, sure, they didn't play a good Brooklyn team, but they scored 150 points in game four, and 100 points came from the bench.
Wow.
So that's a scary proposition. I mean, I think it's those numbers are skewed because it's not a good Brooklyn team. But the Celtics are going to have their hands full. The one thing about Toronto is they have a lot to do, and I think that we mentioned, I think I'd like you to comment on that, because I think now that Marcus Smart is starting, it really cuts into that depth that the Celtics did have on the bench. And I think that, you know, Toronto beats them on the bench pretty badly. So you're going to need a big series, I think, from those big three of the Celtics, Kemba Walker and of course, you know, the two young guys, Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown. All three of those guys are going to have to score heavy volume for the Celtics to be really competitive in this series and to possibly win it.
Well, you answered my question because I was going to ask him, what did you think would be the biggest key for the Celts in this upcoming round of games, and clearly it's getting maximum production from your three stars,
right?
But also getting some kind of quality production when you have to go to the bench.
Yeah, I agree, and you know what's a little scary. As much as we all love the way that Marcus Smart plays defense, now that he's starting, I mean, in that series against Philadelphia, the bottom line is he shot 33% overall and 13%. Concerning when you're playing a Toronto team that can be a team. I mean, you need a little bit more scoring than that. The Celtics only had three players in double figures for the entire series against Philly, and there was a sharp drop-off after that to Marcus Smart scoring 8-5. I mean, Gordon Hayward averaged 12, and of course he got injured, so he was out of the series. However, Toronto has seven guys who averaged double digits in that first series against Brooklyn. Scary team. Kyle Lowry's a veteran, a kid out of Villanova, has had a very nice career. Marc Gasol has tailed off, but you have Pascal Siakam, a guy that most people haven't heard of, averages 23-24 a game. Serge Ibaka, a veteran, averages like 22 a game. They have all sorts of players. A guy's come off the bench, Norm Powell, he averages like 18, 19 a game. They have all kinds of weapons and guys that are relatively unknown around the league. You know, I mean, they're known by the cognoscenti, you know, but most fans don't recognize these guys. Well, you know, if you're a Celtics fan, you're going to recognize these guys very quickly because they play very well as a team. I love the way they play. There's no really no superstar on that team, so they spread the ball around much like the Celtics do. They really do. They kind of play like the Celtics, but I guess if you're a Celtics fan, Tim, you have to look at the fact that the Celtics have beaten them 3 out of 4, and they beat them in the bubble by like 25, 30 points in one of those regular season games. The Celtics hammered them that one time they met them. So I guess you take some good feeling from that game into this next series.
Yeah, you do, but you know, the past is the past, and the only thing that matters is what's in front of you. You know, one of the things that we were talking, I asked Dale Dunbar about, was a very compressed schedule that the Bruins have to play.
Yeah.
Tampa Bay. The Celtics aren't really falling into that. They're not playing back to backs at all, but they've got a day off in between games. They go
right.
Thursday, Saturday, Monday, Wednesday, Friday,
right.
Sunday, Tuesday. So they've got at least a chance to recoup, because it's going to be a physical series. You know, Toronto is going to want to run them off the court if they have the opportunity. And so this spacing of the games with that day in between, and as you mentioned, not traveling anywhere,
certainly
works in the Celtics' favor.
Yeah, and I also think, you know, that overall the best player individually is Jason Tatum on both teams. And Tatum averaging like 27 a game in the playoffs. He's shooting it well. He's really, you know, we see it every day. Ricky, I know you really like Tatum. I love him, too, because of the way he's blossomed every year. He gets a little bit better every year. And this year he's having a great year, and he's having a great playoff so far. I can see him being a guy that can perhaps average somewhere around 30 points per game in his next series. And Jaylen Brown might be up there around 25. And you know, Kemba Walker might be in the 20s as well. So, you know, Tatum is still kind of the go-to guy if you look at an individual player from both teams. And, you know, he's capable of actually carrying a team the way, much in the way that, you know, I don't want to sound sacrilegious, but much in the way that Larry Bird was carrying the Celtics in the 1980s.
Well, he wore the Big Bird shorts the other night, so that's
yeah.
Okay. He's not being sacrilegious. You know, my final thought, Mike, and I want to follow up on this, and it always goes back to me, to Kyrie with the kids, because on Nitwit Radio a couple of years ago, they were talking about you have to have superstars in the NBA. And at that time, you and I and Tim, we all thought, well, the Celtics are growing their own superstars. Why do we need this outside stuff? But then Kemba steps in, and everything I read, everything I hear about him is that he is a really true leader. And I'm wondering how much his presence on that court makes Jason Tatum better and vice versa.
No question. There's no question they're complementary type players. There's not much ego involved with Kemba Walker. I think, Tim, we saw that in this series. He scored, Kemba Walker scored, but he also loved dishing out. And the fact that He hadn't won any playoff series, and all of a sudden, he's so hungry. You know, unlike Kyrie, who had, like we've said, he has an agenda. Kemba Walker's agenda is to be on a winning team. So therefore, he's sacrificing maybe some individual glory, because he could score more, because he used to in Charlotte. He's sacrificing some of that potential individual glory to be part of a winning system. And he's having no problems getting rid of the ball and keeping the ball moving. And to him, it doesn't matter right now whether he's playing 26 minutes or 34. I mean, he's just playing great. I think he matches up extremely well with his two younger guys, Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum. They're complementary players. They look for each other. And then you get, you know, of course, you have Tice. You got the role player. Tice always plays so hard as an undersized big guy. And, of course, Marcus Smart now has to start. And he's always going to get the defense from him. But you just got to hope. You got to get a little more offense out of him in this next series. He can't be shooting 13% on three-pointers and 33% overall. He has to do better than that. And, of course, guys like Enes Kanter, and these other guys who play sporadic minutes off the key against Toronto, I think. You know, but your point about Kemba Walker is well taken. He's definitely been a team guy since the day he got here.
Tim, final thoughts?
Well, you know, and the thing to me is, you know, Walker can come back and all of a sudden he's getting 24 a game because, as you said, he's looking to pass, he's looking to set up Tatum or Brown, and that inevitably leaves shots open for him because you've got defenses sagging towards towards the wings to Brown and Tatum, and so he's seeing a lot more open shots. And you don't want to do that to a guy that can put it in like he can.
That's right. Kemba Walker, the thing I like about him, too, I think you'd have to agree, he's got so many good individual moves. He can create. He's a very creative player for his own shot. I mean, this whole dipsy doodle stuff, I mean, he's left guys broken-legged practically with some of the step-back moves. We've seen that, especially when the bigger guy is on him. I mean, how many times did he take Embiid, who was a seven-footer, to school, you know, kind of faking him and then, like, getting a layup off of Embiid, you know? I mean, Embiid was kind of at a loss, even though he can be a good defensive player. But I thought all of Embiid's flaws showed in that series. He was not in good condition. Every time he had a good first half, he had a poor second half. All his numbers went down in the second half, and particularly in the fourth quarter. And the Celtics they basically beat him up in terms of, like, making him run the floor and making him run out of gas.
Did you see the fake that Marcus Smart put on him in the lane in game three?
Oh, yeah.
I thought he was going to break his ankles.
Oh, yeah. There's no question. But, I mean, the Celtics have those three, you know, those three high-volume scorers, and that can go a long way against Toronto. But I fear Toronto because they have a good starting unit that plays together, and their bench is more experienced than the Celtics and more reliable than the Celtics. So the Celtics are going to have, I think I see this as a long series, Tim. I think it could be a six or seven-game series. So I think the Celtics can win it, but it's not going to be like a four or five games. I see it as an extended series.
Hey, Mike, real quick, the other guys you keep your eye on.
Oh, Donovan Mitchell. My goodness, 51 points last night for the Utah Jazz. He's averaging 39.5. He's shooting 55% from the floor, 54% on threes, and 95% from the foul line. And he's the best unknown player in the NBA. Tim, I don't know if you see him play much, but I love that kid. Young guy.
Yeah.
And he's a tremendous player. I mean, Luka Doncic, obviously a great player for Dallas, but this Donovan Mitchell kid is single-handedly taking over the playoffs for his own team. And they're up three games to one. The Utah Jazz are over Denver. He's a kid to keep an eye on. Not known nationally because he's out there in Utah, but he's a phenomenal player.
Well, Mike, it's great. We'll talk to you next Monday, and we'll see where we are in a week.
That's right. They start Thursday night, so it'll be a lot of fun, guys.
Okay. Mike, thanks so much, man. It's always a blast talking with you. Yep. Appreciate it.
You guys have a great weekend, both of you.
You as well, Mike. Thanks, Mike. Talk to you later. That's Mike Grenier, who is a sports writer extraordinaire, staying in the business, man, and he like all the other guys that we know at the Salem News, just an encyclopedia. Tim, I guess we haven't touched on the Red Sox or the Patriots. You want to talk about either one of them before we go?
Well, the Pats are still in the preseason mode. You know, the Red Sox are trying to find ways to win games. You know, they have to score 37 runs in order to do so.
And they ain't doing that.
No, they're not. No, so they win one, lose one, win one, lose one. You know, they're still marching out the no-name pitching rotation. I looked at last night and went, who the hell is this guy? Something I have no idea.
I know.
You know, so it's tough to watch. And the Pats, you know, it's the Cam Newton show. And, you know, we'll see. You know, they got a lot of new faces. They got a lot of holes to fill. But, you know, in Bill we trust.
I agree. And I'm looking forward to it. I think it's going to be a fun football season if we can, you know, overcome the COVID factor in one way or another. But I think it will be. And it is fun to watch, you know, the playoff games both in the NHL and the NBA at this time. I think they are doing it right by staying in the bubble. And I can only hope, and I know you do too, Tim, that, you know, a reliable vaccine is developed soon so that the kids can get back into a safe setting, both academically and athletically, because this just isn't natural. It just doesn't feel good.
Well, you know, then you're going to run into another problem. The government has said that every kid has to get a flu shot. Well, you're going to have parents saying, I don't want my kid to get a flu shot. And if a vaccine is, whenever a vaccine is put out there, well, are the state's going to require the kids to get the vaccine in order to be in the school to participate in sports? And how many parents are going to go, I don't want my kid to get the vaccine? So you're going to have kids not complying with the rules, and what do you do to them? You let them play, or do you not let them play?
Yeah. Well, that's above my pay grade, so I'll just sit here, look back, and hope for the best.
Yep.
Coach, always fun talking with you, man. Thank you. Be safe, and we'll talk to you again next Monday.
I'll be here.
I know you will, and I appreciate it, Tim. Thank you. I'll be glad when you can be too, also. That'll be great. All right, Coach. Talk to you later. Take care.
All right.
Bye-bye. That's Tim Kearns, our MSO sports analyst and our ambassador of goodwill as well. Goodwill to all of you. Stay safe. Be well. Do the right thing. I'm Rick Moore. On behalf of our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky, Tim Kearns, and Bill Newell, have a very pleasant good evening. This is MSONewsSports.com.